This is Commons Cast, the official podcast of the Martha Rivers Ingram Commons at Vanderbilt University, featuring Q&A with the Dean, the Commons Calendar, and a first-year resident interviewing various humans of the Commons. Now, here's Q&A with Dean Melissa Grisolfi.
Hey, Commodores, welcome back to the Commons Cast. This is Anissa Patel, and today we're back with another episode of Q&A with the Dean. First, I thought I'd mention we're coming hot off Parents Weekend, which brings a ton of fun energy to the campus, which completely blew my mind. Just out of curiosity, do you have a favorite Parents Weekend event or tradition?
Well, yes, Fall for the Arts, which is actually something that my office puts on, so I'm biased. But I also think it's one of the best events. It's one of my favorite events all year, partly because the food is always delicious and fall is my favorite season, so I love the decorations, but also because of all the student performances, which are wonderful.
Yes, I remember stepping outside and seeing the lights and kind of just like the fall atmosphere, the bonfires, whatever, smelled like smoke in the air. And it was just, it felt very cozy and very much so.
And this year it was actually like fallish weather. Sometimes the weekend is coordinated with the football schedule. So I think it was last year, it was in early September. So it was kind of hot.
Oh,
so I like, yeah. So I like the fall weather for Fall for the Arts.
I think it is kind of funny though, that, I mean, a lot of us just saw our parents and now we're about to be headed back home. Or I guess this will come out after we've been home, but like the quick back-to-back turnaround. But I know my parents are very happy about that, and I'm sure many are. So I think that'll be nice.
Yeah.
So I feel like I've been listening to a lot of your past episodes with other My Commons Life members, and I think it is quite amazing how every single episode I tend to take out something different from what you're saying, and then I kind of mold it and apply it to my own life. I find podcasts and self-help to be something that, you know, we could all take more advantage of, especially just considering the nature of the digital world. In that vein, I figured I could ask you a couple questions on your advice for self-improvement and like inner motivation, especially as we go through this kind of new and very difficult and scary time in our world, and then the second half of our first semester as well. So what ways do you see yourself seeking personal growth and self-improvement, and what kind of motivates you to become the better or best version of yourself?
That's a good question. That's something that has changed for me a lot over my lifetime. So I know when I was in college, the thing that really drove me was grades. I always cared a lot about my grades. I got good grades in high school. I wanted to get good grades in college. And so that really, like, my performance drove a lot of things. But it also made me, I think, sometimes not seek out things, right? Because I wanted to do things that I knew I was good at. And when something didn't go well, it would really make me pretty upset.
Yeah.
I remember the spring of my freshman year, I took a psychology class that was, class was hard, but more specifically, the labs were graded in a really difficult way. And also I was doing a play, and also I was pledging a sorority. And also I met the person who I'm now married to, but
Did you go to school here?
No. I went to a small liberal arts college.
Okay.
But I did meet my husband in my freshman year in college. And so, you know, that was very exciting and distracting. So I will say I wasn't really maybe spending as much time on the class as I thought maybe I should have. But, I got a B minus in the class overall, which was like, for me, the lowest grade I'd ever gotten in a class. I was very upset about it. And it really felt like a statement about me. And that was actually probably a really important moment, because after I got over being upset, I thought, well, you know, why did I actually get this grade? Like, you know, was there something I could have done differently? Is there something I would want to have done, like that I would do differently? And I kind of looked back at my semester and I was like, no, I was really glad I did that play. I was really glad I pledged that sorority. I was like, really liked this guy I was dating. And so ultimately I said, I guess that was just my time for a B minus. And I don't want to get another B minus. And so I need to think about why that happened. But that experience really helped me a lot. And then the next thing that happened was, when I was in graduate school, I actually learned about, because I have my PhD in educational psychology, I learned about motivation. And it one idea that is very popular now. People talk about a lot now, but was kind of new decades ago. Well, when I was in graduate school, is the idea of different sort of goal orientations, different reasons for trying. And so you hear about this all the time now, being mastery oriented versus performance oriented. And basically growth mindset is the idea of being mastery oriented, right? Yeah. So that was not like an everyday kind of thing when I was in undergraduate or even in graduate school. That was a new way of thinking in motivation theory. And I just remember when I learned about that thinking, oh, well, this really makes a lot of sense that performance orientation is always about someone else's assessment of you and mastery orientation is always about your opportunity to improve. And if you adopt the sort of mastery, the growth mindset, you can always see failure as an opportunity for growth. And it took me a while to actually make that transition. But I think a lot of the time now I do. And so I'm getting to your question. Your question was like, well, so why do you like, what?
No, but I think that's important. I think a lot of students, myself included, see failure as not a moment of growth, but a moment of weakness. And I think that's obviously kind of how we're trained to see it. But making that switch is definitely not easy to do. But I can imagine once that switch is made, it kind of shifts your outlook on what actually is going to motivate you to be your best version of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So I will say it is not, for me, I still get really upset when something happens, you know, when I, you know, as an academic thing, you get things rejected all the time. That's just life. So if I don't get a grant, it's still really depressing to me. Or if my article gets rejected or, you know, sometimes I'm working on an idea, just even at the university where I think is a really good idea and other people don't agree. And like, it still makes me sad. It's not that you don't still have that feeling. But I think the difference now is that after I let myself be sad and say, yes, it is disappointing to have tried hard at something and to not have it go the way you want. That's disappointing. But then to say, okay, well, why did that happen and what could happen differently next time? And I think that is the difference between sort of like wallowing and improving. And so that orientation really for me has really helped. And so, you know, sometimes you need to talk that through with someone else because you're not really unbiased about yourself, right? And so sometimes you need a good friend who can say, honestly, that wasn't your best effort.
Right.
But that's, I think, largely like my motivation is always about growing and improving and changing. And the older you are, this is like the good news about aging. There's some bad news about aging. Like my back hurts almost all the time. But the good news about aging is that you have stories of success to look back on. And so when you have a moment of failure, you can say, oh, I've been here before.
Yeah, it's not permanent.
Right. Like I fail all the time, it turns out. And then also sometimes I succeed too. And so it doesn't become quite so, you know, depressing. But that growth mindset, I know it is like very popular to talk about, but I mean, it's popular for a reason. It really helps me to focus on the things I can control and change. And that is really motivating because then I have control over those things.
Right. So I think, I guess, I've kind of set myself up for this question, but how would you define your own personal success and what are your personal goals for achieving that? Obviously, you don't aim to fail, but kind of where does the middle ground kind of find between you achieving success but also knowing that you're going to fail and that's what's going to make you more successful?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that there's a lot of different levels that you could answer that question at. So on the one hand, like, so I have two jobs right now. I'm the dean of residential colleges.
Correct.
But I'm also a professor. And right now I'm not teaching any classes, which is helpful because I feel a little busy. But I do still have research projects and I have doctoral students and people that I mentor. And so I have goals associated with being dean of res colleges and I have goals associated with being a professor. And sometimes the goals are pretty low level. Like lately for me, it's like, if I complete most things on time, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah. And I mean, you also wear the hat of a mother and a daughter and all of the other things. So
that is true. Yes. Yeah. My son was just saying to me on the way home from school just today, he's like, you have a lot more free time than I do. I was like, No, I do not. But I said, I will give you that I have more flexibility in my time. Correct. Than you do. He's like, right, so you could make more free time. And I was like, well, I also have more responsibilities. But anyway, so like for me, literally lately, I just am trying to get things done on time. But then I also have goals for res colleges, right? Ways that I'm constantly trying to figure out how can we make sure that we are, so the big goal of res colleges is basically inclusivity, that people come to this campus and feel like I belong here. And I know everyone has that motto, but it's actually a really hard thing to do because we have people come here from all over the world, literally. And so for the same place to feel like home to such a hugely diverse group of people, that's a real challenge. And so we can't just have one program and make that happen, right? We have to do lots and lots of different things. And so for me, like trying to think about who's coming to our programs, who feels invited, who feels seen, who's just enjoying themselves, like all of those sort of metrics are things I'm paying attention to because that's my big goal for res colleges is that people do feel like this is a place where they belong. For my professor job right now, I really just want all of my students, my doctoral students, to be writing more papers. Please write more journal articles if you are listening. And so that is what we spend a lot of time doing lately because, you know, if you write, then you're more likely to
practice,
get.
Practice, yeah.
Exactly. But then I have big goals too. Like I really want my family to go on a vacation this summer and I want everyone to enjoy that vacation, yeah. Which is my kids are 10 and 13. So that's not really a given. So
where are you thinking of going?
Well, it's my husband's 50th this year. He's turning 50. And, so we want to do something that he wants to do. The problem is that, in our dynamic, we've been married 21 years. He is like pretty low key and laid back about things. And I am like the Energizer bunny. Okay. And so he will be like, oh, maybe I'd like to, I don't know, go backpacking. And then like, I'm off to the races.
Exactly.
And
you take the idea and you just boom.
Right. Run with it. But sometimes he maybe didn't really mean that's what he wasn't ready, you know, for that. And so I was just talking to him about that this weekend. I said, I want to have a great vacation for your 50th, which he also wants. But I don't want to bulldoze you with my planning. And so I need you to like really think about what do you want to do? You don't have to plan it, but then you have to like say like, yes, I want to go backpacking or I want to go hiking. So I'm hoping we're going backpacking in Lake Tahoe, but I don't know. We'll have to see.
That'll be fun. I need to be more connected with nature. Not because like I'm not, but just in terms of, I think there's so much more to appreciate if I were to just maybe take a little bit more time to not be inside on my phone or whatever. So that should be very nice. I've never really thought about going backpacking before, but I feel like that could be something very interesting.
It is interesting is the perfect word. It is beautiful. It is effort. And I learned about myself that if I really want to relax, this is kind of ironic, but if I want to relax, I need to go on a trip where I'm working on something, not like work, but you know, so I realized this when I was in graduate school, we went on a white, and I was very stressed out in graduate school, especially at first, we went on a whitewater rafting trip, which was terrifying. I don't even like the water. I was like, this is where I die. But, when we finally got back from that weekend, which was a lot of camping, it was hard work. I was so much more relaxed than when we left. And I realized it was because I had not thought about work, my schoolwork for the whole weekend. I had just focused on hiking and not dying in the water and, you know, meeting these other people. And it was wonderful. And so I've taken that. So a lot of our vacations tend to be more active like that.
So when you kind of find yourself in moments of solitude and you don't really have anything to think about, I guess it's probably shifted now. When you were in college, would your brain immediately go to school? What could I be doing better? What are my grades? Like that kind of thing?
Yes, that is still where my brain goes, actually. It's like my to-do list and like what should I be doing? And sometimes it's interesting thoughts like a paper I want to be writing. But yes, I know there are people who have creative, daydreamy kinds of thoughts, but those are that I am not that person.
I think in moments, I kind of switch between either like grades or like, this is terrible. Like, what is everyone else doing and why am I not doing it? You know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. kind of like, not FOMO, but what could I be doing better? Or what could I be doing to enhance my life in a way that I haven't decided to yet or haven't gotten the opportunity to yet? And so I think that you're kind of always on edge a little bit because you're kind of always like, what can I be doing more? But it does probably foster more of like a motivational type.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty normal. And then, it creates a kind of anxiety. Anxiety can be facilitative, right? It can help you, and it can also be debilitating. And so, like, that boundary between So like you're sort of using other people as like a measure, like, am I kind of doing the right thing? And there's no way to not do that. But also it is also true that comparison is the thief of joy, right? And so, which is weird. So it helps you figure out, am I doing the right thing? Like, and it also could be too much. And that finding that balance between those two is, I think, a lot of what just like growing up is about.
I would love to ask you more about your relationship, given that you found your husband in your freshman year. That's so interesting. But I do know that you are double booked today. And so I hope I didn't tire you out too much. And it was lovely speaking with you.
You too.
I'm Anissa Patel. Keep listening to hear about what's coming up this week on the Commons calendar. And we will see you next time on our Q&A with the Dean.
Hi there, my name is Cynthia, and today I'll be giving you the rundown of events happening at Vandy this upcoming month. Does dancing interest you, but you have no experience or a partner? Join Vandy Ballroom on Wednesday, October 18th at 6 p.m. in Branscombe Studio for a beginner-level ballroom dance class. We will be learning different types of dances like swing, foxtrot, tango, salsa, waltz, and etc. Do you need a de-stressor? Join Hank 6 on Thursday, October 19th at 7 p.m. for a quick study break. They will be drawing, coloring books, listening to music, as well as drinking chai tea to relax during the semester. Are you looking for something fun to do on Sunday? Join VMS at Game Terminal for an afternoon of fun this Sunday, October 22nd at 3 p.m. There will be a wide selection of free indoor/outdoor games, as well as one free menu item for the first 10 people to RSVP and an appetizer for all to share. On Monday, October 23rd, Sutherland East and Gillette Houses will be having their respective events to celebrate and encourage bonding amongst the residents. Be sure to stop by. Do you want to get into the fall spirit? Then stop by Branscombe Lobby on Tuesday, October 24th at 6 p.m. for mini pumpkin painting to celebrate the fall season. Mini pumpkins and painting supplies will be provided. This was all for the third week of October, but be sure to keep an eye out on Inkerling for any future events. And now stay tuned for the Human of the Commons interview. Thank you.
Hi, Doors. Welcome to the Human of the Commons interview. My name is Lauren, and today I'm going to be talking with Divine Irakiza, a civil engineering major from Bowling Green, Kentucky. So how's your day been, Divine?
My day's been good. I went to bed a little too late last night, so I've been a little bit tired, but it's okay. Pushing through.
Okay. That's fair. I definitely had some late nights this week as well. So
this week has been a week of late nights for me. So
I'm sorry.
It's just me goofing around with my friends. It's my fault.
Okay,
honestly.
So it's fun. It's not like you're working.
Yeah, it's like I'll work for 30 minutes and then goof off for 15. So it's a good ratio, but not for my sleep schedule. But it's okay.
Okay, fair. So I just like want to get to know you a little bit in this interview. And I know and now is not the time to panic. You know, we all read that book.
Yeah.
Right.
We had
right.
To,
everyone. Yeah. OK. So Frankie, who's the main character, she grows up and as an adult, she lives in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And you live there too, right?
Yeah, that's okay. Like my big claim to fame. Like I tell everybody, oh yeah, the book, like I'm from Bowling Green, Kentucky. So it's my big claim to fame. Yeah.
Okay. Do you miss it?
Yeah. I have an interesting relationship with Bowling Green. Like I love my house, my family, and Bowling Green's pretty diverse. I'm from Rwanda. So Bowling Green's pretty diverse. Like we have a large refugee population. So I like that part of it, but it's just a really like, it's a medium town. It's a college town. There's not much to do. And like, I love that it's growing and I see that it's growing, but it's just like not the place for me. Cause like, I always wanted to be in a big city. That's why like Nashville is a big thing for me. So I miss like my family and my friends, but not necessarily like the city. It's just like nice to go back and like, oh, fresh land, like open land. I can see everything, but it's not that I necessarily like miss it. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And with the open land thing, you live on a farm, right?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I think that's actually what I miss the most. So my family got a farm a few years ago, like right before COVID. So we have 23 acres. We live on one. So there's 22 acres that are used for like, we rotate between corn, wheat, and soybeans. So we don't have animals. Everybody always asks like, do you have animals? But I have too many siblings for us to have animals. But we like see deer all the time and like, a few foxes sometimes, so I guess that counts as animals. But yeah, it's like it's nice to see all the open land, like to see when the harvest is coming up. I don't know. It's, yeah. It's kind of, my friends laugh about it now, but like it's a big Kentucky thing, I guess, to have a farm. So
okay. Do a lot of people, is that a smaller scale farm too, like 23
acres? Oh yeah. Like in Kentucky, that would be a pretty small farm. Like my dad teaches agriculture, agriculture economics. So he has a lot of students who have like huge family farms, like 1,000 acres, 2,000 acres. And those are the ones that make a lot more money. But like a 20 acre, that's a pretty small farm. It's a good amount of land, but a pretty small farm.
Okay. Do you like sell any of the stuff that you grow?
Yeah, we, so honestly, like I don't do anything. Like we watch the machines come in, put the corn in, they come back and they'll like spray whatever they need to spray and they'll come and harvest. And then my dad does all the stuff, but it goes like they wait for it to get dry, they come and harvest it and they sell it into like wherever it goes. I really don't know.
Okay, that's cool though. So, and do you spend time out there ever, even though you're not working? Okay.
Yeah, whenever we have corn, we'll go pick some corn like for fun. Like we'll just be like, oh, do you want corn for dinner? We'll go get corn and grill like corn. And sometimes my mom will like make, I don't know how she does it with the soybeans, but she'll make stuff with that. And we just like to sit out there and look at it. Like I have a long driveway because of the amount of land. So sometimes I'll just walk down my driveway to get the mail. I don't know, it's like, it's nice. It's like, it just feels nice to be out there sometimes. You know?
Yeah, no, it feels like much less overwhelming than being even on campus because there's like a lot of people here and that kind of thing.
So. Yeah, and like whenever I go home, I'll look up at the stars because I can actually see them. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the stars. Yeah. So yeah, that's definitely a part, like a nice part of it.
That is cool. Yeah, oh my gosh, the light pollution from Broadway is insane.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You can't see anything here. Yeah, that's cool. I also know that you have some side projects going on. So I was wondering if you could just tell me a little bit about those.
Yeah. So I think 2021, I started my small business and it's basically customizable embroidery. If anybody wants to look it up, it's beboldprint.com or it's on Instagram. And I just like people will give me orders or I have designs that are existing and you can tell me the color of the stitching, the fabric, whatever. And I have an embroidery machine in my shed and I'll go out there and make it. It's been fun. Like I, for my existing designs, I need models. So like my friends and I will go downtown to like the parking garage and we'll take pictures. It's like a fun thing to do with them. So yeah, it's like definitely been a cool thing. And I don't get to do it much now since I'm here, but it's like one of the things I like to do. And I also like writing poetry. So okay. I like would post on my Finsta account like my poems. Sometimes my friends are like, Divine, like this is really cool. So I started a separate Instagram account for that. It's Divine.poetry. Anybody wants to follow that? But I just like, it's kind of like Taylor Swift. Like whatever's going on in my life, I write about it.
Okay.
So sometimes I have to like wait a few months to post something. So it's not like, oh, they know I wrote a poem about them, you know, like, or about a situation. So that's another thing that I like to do, I guess.
Okay, that's really neat. So I want to circle back to the embroidery thing. Do you like, you said you design the different things that you embroider, but that you like put them into your sewing machine. Does mm-hmm. that involve programming? Like what goes into
yes.
that?
Yes. Okay. So I use this programming tool called Embrilliance. And so I basically like make the designs on the Embrilliance like platform and then I'll download them, put them into the embroidery machine software. So there's different like sources that you can use like for embroidery. You can even like buy pre-made designs and just embroider those. But Embrilliance is pretty easy and like there's text that comes on there, like fonts that are already in established, or I could like just kind of mess around with different shapes and stuff. It takes some getting used to because what you see on the screen and what you get when you actually embroider it can be different. But I mean, once I like got used to it, I did have a few hiccups. Once I got used to it, it's a pretty good platform. So
that's really cool. And how did you get into it?
So my school, I took a fashion class like in high school. And I got done with, like, all my sewing stuff, and the teacher had an embroidery machine in there, so she was just showing us how to do it. And I was like, oh, my gosh, like, this is so cool. And my dad was like, I mean, if you're so, like, interested in it. At that point, I, like, needed a job. Like, I had just turned 16, so I could, like, finally start working. So he, like, helped me establish that, and then, like, I got it up and running, so.
That's really cool. Oh, my gosh. That's, like, so much initiative, too. I never would have, like, had the, I don't know, like, confidence even to set something like that up. So that's really neat.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. So I guess that's kind of all I have to ask you today. Thank you so much for sharing a little bit about yourself and like letting everyone on Commons get to know you better. Thanks to all of our listeners for sticking with us through this Commons cast today, and make sure to tune in again next week. So have a great week, everyone.
Commons cast is produced by My Commons Life, a division of student media at Vanderbilt, in cooperation with the Office of the Dean of the Ingram Commons. Subscribe to Commonscast at Apple Podcasts or via your favorite podcast app.